Moshe Rabbeinu was not zoche, was not privileged to lead Bnei Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. And we're all familiar with the circumstances. Lohay Amayim La'edo Vayikalu Al Moshe Val Aaron. The people complained and ganged up on Moshe Rabbeinu and demanded water. And at the command of Kodesh Baruch Hu, Moshe and Aaron gathered together the people. And the Torah tells us, Vayakilu Moshe v'Aaron es ha-kahal el p'nei ha-sela. Vayomer lehem, and Moshe said to them, Shimu na ha-morim. Hamin ha-sela hazeh notzi lachem mayim. Shimu na ha-morim, listen please, you rebellious people. I'm going to give you water. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe v'el Aaron, Yan lo he'emantem bi, lahakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael, lechein lo saviu es ha-kahal hazeh, el ha'aretz Hashem nasati lehem. Because of this, you will not be privileged to lead Am Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. The Rishonim and Achronim present no less than 25 or 26 explanations of the misstep of Moshe Rabbeinu. 26 different opinions. What did he do wrong? Seems that when a rabbi does something wrong, everybody has an opinion. There is a 27th opinion that the Shari Aaron does not bring. And it was published in about 15 years ago. Ksavim of the Ksav Sofer came to light, and he quoted his father, the Ksam Sofer, who offered a most elegant interpretation, opinion, as to what Moshe Rabbeinu did, dare we say it, that was not correct. Shimu na hamori. Listen, please, you rebellious people. As parents, we know that when we have to discipline our children, a no is a no. And yet when it's time to praise our children, a yes is a yes. But the worst thing that we can do in parenting is to send mixed messages to our children. The worst thing that can be done in Jewish leadership is to send mixed messages. And this explains the Ksam Sofer, was Moshe Rabbeinu's misstep. Shimu na, please, please, listen, you rebellious people. This was not a time to say Shimu na, to say please. Moshe sent mixed signals to Bnei Yisrael. And for that reason, it was not zoche to take us into Arzeinu HaKadosha, into Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. We have learned from Moshe Rabbeinu, from the anguish we can only imagine that Moshe Rabbeinu felt, not being able, being deprived of that great experience of coming into Eretz Yisrael. And it is the rare individual whose lot it is to serve as a manhig Yisrael, to clearly articulate the position of Torah in all of the difficult issues of our time. If there is one aspect that might describe the hanhaga of our guest speaker tonight, It is his ability and his courage to say it like it is. To say Shimuna when it's necessary, and to say Hamorim when it's necessary. Because at the end of the day, Jewish leadership is defined by clarity, by articulating what has to be done, and by inspiring a people that is so desperately in need of inspiration to make the move. And if Moshe Rabbeinu was not zocha to take B'nai Yisrael and to show us how to get to Eretz Yisrael because of a seemingly lack of clarity, a seeming mixing of messages, what will take us to Eretz Yisrael Hashlema and to Yerushalayim Habnuya will be that clarity. Rav Sholem Gold has distinguished himself in his own personal life, as all of us here know, a Rav and Rebbe of so many of us here, as a Rav for so many years in Toronto. But all of those years here in Toronto, with his founding of the Yeshiva, Ner Yisrael Yeshiva, being Rav in B'nai Torah, moving to New York, but it was always Libe B'Mizrach. And he made the plunge and never looked back, except to come back and continue to encourage us with the clarity of that message to come join him. Rabbi Gold serves today as one of the Gedolei HaRabbonim of Eretz Yisrael. And indeed, his voice is a voice of clarity and leadership and scholarship. And it is with a great deal of kavod that I, at this time, ask you all to new kavod l'Torah, Arav Sholem Gold.
Thank you very much, Rav Goro, for I must say, a very, very beautiful introduction, and I'm humbled by it. It places a great responsibility upon my shoulders. Whenever Yom Yerushalayim comes, I remind myself of a story that has haunted me for years, and it continues to haunt me. The story is brought in the book, The Battle for Jerusalem, that was written by Abraham Rabinovich. He describes the early morning of Chaf Chet Iyar, 1967, as the assault for Yerushalayim has begun. Israeli paratroopers have broken into the city. They're making their way through the alleyways, through those narrow streets of Yerushalayim, block by block, house by house. I always have a vision of that day, that it was an absolutely beautiful morning in Yerushalayim, blue skies, cloudless. I also have this feeling that during the course of the night, the angels in heaven were in a state of great stress. The Ofanim and the Serafim and the Chayos HaKodesh are aware that this is the great day that has been chosen by the Rebbeinu Shel Olam to give the great gift, the prize. Yerushalayim has returned to his people Israel. The 87th battle for the city is taking place that morning, and the tension in heaven is great as Israeli paratroopers keep making their way through the streets. But there they are, they're 19, 20 year olds. They've never been to the Kotel. They don't know precisely where the Kotel is. It wasn't an open plaza as it is today. Many, many little streets. Rabinovich, reports that as they were making their way through one street, in a doorway, they see a frightened young man standing there. They approach him and they tell him, "We mean you no harm." 19-year-old soldiers had never been in the cartel for 19 years. Jews were not permitted there. And they tell him, "Just show us the way to the cartel." This young man points the way, and he watches as Israeli soldiers make their way to the cartel, up to the Temple Mount. He sees the Israeli flag going up over the Har HaBayit. And the story ends by Abraham Rabinovich saying, "Who was this young man?" This young man was Mohammed Daoud Schleifer, a New York-born Jew by the name of Mark David Schleifer, most probably by the Bris, they called him Motre David, who had unfortunately converted to Islam, married a Jordanian girl, was living in the old city of Jerusalem, working for a newspaper. And the last sentence of the story is, "What a strange witness to one of the greatest moments in all of Jewish history." What a strange witness. Motre David Schleifer, unfortunately, is incapable of grasping the significance of what he has just, what he's just seen. He doesn't have a clue what's happening. He's so cut off from anything Jewish, he's not tuned in at all. What a waste. What a strange witness. What a profound, profound human tragedy. What is it that haunts me about this story is that with the passage of years, I've begun to realize you don't have to be a New York-born Jew who converts to Islam in order to be a Mark David Schleifer. You can be a Sheni Yid, you can be a fine Orthodox Balabas, you can be a Talmud Chacham, you can be a wonderful, wonderful Jew, and simply not tuned in and not connected to Jewish history. Out of it, you'll meet enough people right here in Toronto, and you'll ask them, "Do you know what today is?" Sunday. Ask them tomorrow. They don't have a clue. I keep coming up against this time and time again. Yom Yerushalayim. Lo Yodid. Ain't no hell who's sang, they don't have a clue. And they're fine Jews, and they're good Jews. But to varying degrees, they suffer from the Mark David Schleifer syndrome. Just being out of it. Not tuned in. Before Pesach, I was at a community, and I had a shiur, and in the course of the shiur, I talked about the pain of Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael today. There are all sorts of things that are going on. Fine, fine young man comes over to me, and afterwards, What's the pain of Eretz Yisrael today? There were a few people there that saw that. There's going to be an explosion over here, you understand? They hustled this guy out one side, got me out the other side. He didn't have a clue. I'm sitting in a luncheonette someplace in New York. It was the morning just over a year ago, where the paper reported about a woman by the name of Tali Chatuel. in her 9th month of pregnancy and her 4 daughters who were killed execution style. Yes, Gush Katif. I'm sitting reading the paper. My tears are coming down. I'm crying like a baby. There's one fellow on one side that's reading the financial section. There's a guy on the other side that's reading the sports section. And if they saw what was happening to me, they must have thought, I'm a nut. What's wrong with this fellow? I'm not the one who's tuned out. But unfortunately, there are many, many people who are tuned out. The mitzvah of our time is, don't be a Mark David Schleifer. Great events require a great response. And I humbly want to describe what I think should be the response to the great event of Yom Yerushalayim. So stasis v'togel ba'akoro v'kiblitz b'neho l'toka v'simcha I tell you, people have said this bracha under a pulpit by Sheva brothers. They've said it time and time again. They sing it. There are such beautiful nigunim for Seistasis. If my voice would be okay now, I'd do a shwecky job on Seistasis. It would be great. I've hardly found a person who understands what the bracha is all about. Seistasis, the toge lo'akara. Let the barren one be full of joy, the kibbutz boneho, the tocha, the simcha, by the ingathering of the children returning to Yerushalayim. Baruch ato Hashem misameach Tzion. He gives joy to Tzion, boneho. The great joy of Tzion, of Yerushalayim, is the return of her children. We've got to put Aliyah seriously onto the agenda of the American and Canadian Jewish community, the Western world. We have to begin a movement, as indeed happened after the Six-Day War and the liberation of Yerushalayim. Well, to me, Aliyah, my personal Aliyah, is always related to Toronto. Not because I wanted to get away from here, I had gone already. I was already in New York for 10 years. But I had certain problems and questions that I had to resolve, and I decided the man to talk to was Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zechut Tzadik Livracha, a great pikeach, a man of great wisdom and great scholarship. He doesn't need me to tell you what he was. At the time, I was in New York, he was in Toronto. I called Rabbi Yaakov up and I made an appointment. I came to see him, I think it was 147 Palm Drive. I think that's where he was staying. So here the scene shifts to Palm Drive. I had an hour and a half conversation with him that was so precious, it's a gem. Every minute was so significant. To me, the most significant sentence of all was one that I've told to people who have written biographies of Rav Yaakov, but nobody brings this quote. He told me, and I'll say it in Yiddish exactly the way he said it. It is so indelibly inscribed on my mind and my heart. Reb Sholem Zost Wissen, ich halt as zam mitzvah hangt, as a Jesus Almo given, fallen in Eretz Yisrael, umvolt ikent vol de chiedz gegangen in Erpot agoi fatflugzeug, umgefallen in Eretz Yisrael. Abiruch Kendish. Translation. That Sholem, you should know that I hold that it's a mitzvah today the way it always was to live in Eretz Yisrael, and if I could, he was 91 years old at the time, if I could, I would go to the airport now and get on a plane and go straight to Eretz Yisrael. But I can't. But I can't.
Well, maybe I shouldn't say the second half of this story, but no, I think it was godless. It was such greatness. I never told this in public. I can't, he said, because my wife can't leave her grandchildren. So now, I could have been a wise guy and asked Rabbi Yankov, but listen, Rabbi, you know what the halach is. Say he wants to go. She doesn't want to go. You can go. You can force her. You could have been up shining a town kuchel over there. But sometimes I have said, sometimes I know when not to say what's on my mind. But the Rabbi Yankov sent the answer. Two weeks after that, there was a convention of rabbis in New York, and the convention was really called by Rabbi Yankov. There were 500 rabbis there. It was a two-day conference, and Rabbi Yankov got up and said on the first day, I want to apologize and ask forgiveness. I can only be here today. I can't be here tomorrow. And I know I called the conference, but you should know, I promised my wife that I'm taking her on vacation, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. And I want you to know, when my first wife died, I was 68 years old, and I was certain that I would never reach 70. I was so broken. And I'm alive now at 91 because of my wife. It was pikuach nefesh for Rabbi Yankov. It was pikuach nefesh. God of Israel was able to talk to 500 rabbanim. Somebody turned to me and said, can you imagine getting married at 68 and getting ready to celebrate your silver wedding anniversary? Es ist eine Mitzvah, keint, wie es ist allemal gewann. I'm always fond of quoting the story of Rav Shlomo Zalman Horvath. There was Some fancy guy from Chutz Laretz had gone through all of the halachic material with regard to whether it is a mitzvah, it isn't a mitzvah, is it a mitzvah, the arise, is it a mitzvah, the rabbonah is a mitzvah, chiyuv is a mitzvah, chiyuv. He went through all the rishayim and the aplayim. And finally makes an appointment, he comes there, it's a slow, and he gets into Rav Shlomo Zalman, and he starts pouring out all of his tefillah to Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shlomo Zalman was an idol of heat. Oh, what an exceptional, outstanding individual. And he says, in his inimitable way, it's not important. I mean, this fellow is devastated. He's been preparing for months. What do you mean? Was meint der Rebbe? It's not important. He says, it doesn't make any difference. Whether it's a mitzvah in a Torah, it's a mitzvah in a Rabbanan, whether it's a mitzvah chiyumis, or it's a mitzvah chiyumis. Open up a chumash, and you'll see on every page, Ritzon Hashem, God's will is that his people should live in his land. That's all that's important. Nothing else is important. By the way, Toronto comes into this picture in another way. A number of years ago, Rav Heshen Schachter had written the Nefesh HaRav, and then he wrote the Peninei HaRav about Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Heshen Schachter, the Rosh HaKolel, great, great Talmud Chacham, Rosh HaKolel of Yeshiva University. On the first page of Peninei HaRav, the first page, he quotes Rav Avishai David. You must know who Rav Avishai David is. Because Rav Avishai David as having told him in the name of the Rav that the Rav said the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, this is the exact words, Rak mitzvah kiyumis, it's only an optional mitzvah. By the way, that was the position of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe Feinstein's position was that it's not an obligatory mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's an optional mitzvah. At one wedding in Eretz Yisrael, I meet Avishai David, and I tell him, Rabbi Avishai, I have a kindness to you for one word. That. It's only. And then I met Herschel Schachter in another wedding. I told him, Herschel,
your first page, you upset me. It's a great cipher. I had at one time also sort of been upset, so to speak, with Rav Moshe Psak and Rav Soloveitchik, until one day it occurred to me it's the greatest Psak of them all. Do you know what the Psak of Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Soloveitchik, that the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is not obligatory, but it is optional in the event that one does indeed live in Eretz Yisrael, one fulfills a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah to yumis. Do you know what that means? That we're left with the freedom to choose. I don't have to go to Eretz Yisrael. I can choose to fulfill the will of God. Nothing binds me. Nothing requires it of me. Just my relationship with the Rebbeinu Shlomo. I can choose it. My friend Chaim Waxman, who is a great sociologist, in his book about American Aliyah, he describes and defines the American Oleh as a free migrant of an innovative nature. And if you didn't understand that, that's okay. Okay, you have to hear it a second time, and you may not even understand it the second time. An American Oleh is a free migrant of an innovative nature. I met Chaim Waxman also in Eretz Yisrael. I told him, such a big definition you need for a Meshuggah, an American who goes Aliyah. That's what he is. He's a Meshuggah for Eretz Yisrael. That's what he is. But Chaim Waxman is expressing Rav Moshe and Rav Soloveitchik, a free migrant. I once imagined in my mind's eye what happens if Rav Moshe would have asked him that it's obligatory to live in Eretz. You have to go. What would have happened with his Talmidim? There are those who obviously would have found another Dovid Yisrael. And the ones who wouldn't found another brother being a star, I can imagine them, I can see them right now in my mind's eye at ABC Trading on the east side as they're preparing their lift with tears coming down their eyes. I want that 27-inch color TV, fiddle free. I may never be able to buy another one. I need that fridge with the ice making, and said, poor guy doesn't know it'll never get in the door to his apartment in Eretz Yisrael. You understand what the sack of Rav Moshe and Rav Soloveitchik is? I can choose in the fullness of my relationship to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, I can choose to get up and go and do it. There's such power, there's such strength for that kind of a fulfillment of the mitzvah. I believe it was also expressed in that famous word of Rav Soloveitchik and of Rav Kook in the pasuk in Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu asks me, Eile ka'ov te'ufeno, who are those that come flying like a cloud, v'chayonim el aruvotehem, and like pigeons coming back to their nests. The Navi is asking, Jews are coming from all over the world, they're coming back to Eretz Yisrael. Who are these clouds? Who are these clouds moving in the direction of Eretz Yisrael? Who are these birds? These pigeons that are coming home. So he said that there are going to be two kinds of Olim. There will be the Olim who's like a cloud. The cloud doesn't have any built-in mechanism. It's as the wind blows. That's where he's going to go. There is no inner determination, but this is it. All doors are closed. The only place is Eretz Yisrael. And then there are those who are like the homing pigeon. a built-in motivation, a system from within, knows exactly where to go and zeroes in. That's the one who goes to Eretz Yisrael out of the fullness of his relationship with the Chavrei Shalom. He chooses to. It doesn't have to be an obligatory mitzvah. On the contrary, it's not obligatory. I'll tell you, there's a book that was published just a few weeks ago in Eretz Yisrael, Al Tishlach Yadecha El Hanar. I don't know if it has arrived here yet. It's an autobiography of Rav Lau. Autobiography of the former chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, who is at present the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, that Yisrael may allow. I tell you, in all honestly, unashamedly, I cried like a baby through the first 150 pages of that book. There's no question about it that it's most probably been translated into 20 languages by now. The war, Second World War, began Rav Lau, Yisrael Meir, or Lulik, as his mother called him, was 2 years old. The story of how he survived, and as a seven-year-old, ended up in Buchenwald, the youngest child, the number of near catastrophe for him, it's unbelievable. It's just, I don't want to ruin the book for you. Stories were awesome. Mother. At one point, at Buchenwald, they were being defined, separated, mothers and children on one side, men on the other. What great power of a mother. She had an instinct. This is the wrong line for Yisrael Meir to be in. And she told him, run to your brother, run to Naphtali. The little boy ran. They found out after the war that an hour later, his mother was already dead. And Naphtali had been told by his mother, take care of Yisrael Meir. The story is awesome. But only one scene. They're beginning to round up all of the men in Buchenwald to send them elsewhere for extermination. And Naphtali feels that this is it. This may be the end. He arranges that the Yisrael Meir, who is in another part of the camp, they meet behind a barrack. And he tells them the following. So, Mayor, I don't know if we're ever going to make it through. I don't know how much longer I have. I'm being taken away. I want to teach you two words. You're a very wonderful little boy. There are people who like you. There are those who are taking care of you. I want you to learn two words. Rav Lau writes that he had never gone to school. He didn't know how to read or write, knew nothing. Even Yiddish was difficult, no Hebrew. And his brother, near the barbed wire, tells him, say after me, Eretz. Say Eretz, Eretz. Yisrael, Yisrael. Nachamo, again, Eretz Yisrael. And he kept going over it until this seven-year-old was able to say Eretz Yisrael. And he asked, what's Eretz Yisrael? So he says, it's the one place in the world for the Jew. Someday you may be saved and the war will be over. There will be people who will want to take you to many places in the world. Tell them no place, only one. Eretz Yisrael, one place in the world. And the miracle happened. His older brother jumped off a train and made his way back to Buchenwald. And he was there with Yisrael Meir on the day of the of the day of liberation. Sometimes we lose sight of how significant Eretz Yisrael is for Klal Yisrael. We forget. We get involved in the daily problems, and Eretz Yisrael has so many of them. We forget two words. Eretz Yisrael. The one place. The one place. Eretz Yisrael has become a great deal more than a place for fulfillment of mitzvah. There was an article in 1990 in the Jerusalem Post. The article said the following. The article said that by the end of the decade, that meant the end of the century, man, woman, or child is going to walk off a plane onto the tarmac at Ben Gurion Airport, and a dramatic change is going to take place in all of Jewish history. The ramifications are going to be fossil. At the end of the decade, man, woman, or child are going to walk off a plane onto the tarmac at Ben Gurion Airport, and at that moment in time, Eretz Yisrael is going to become the largest Jewish community in the world. The last time Eretz Yisrael was the largest Jewish community in the world was in the time of Bayit Rishon, First Temple. Period of Second Temple, there were larger numbers of Jews in Babel and elsewhere. Before the war, there were 400,000 Jews in Eretz Yisrael. At the establishment of the state, there were 600,000. There must have been a dozen countries with larger Jewish communities. Everything has changed globally so dramatically. I was, before Pesach, I was away for about a week or two, and I came back, and it seems I missed a Jerusalem Post report that said that Eretz Yisrael is the largest Jewish community in the world. The prediction in that 1990 article put it at about the year 2000, 2001, and I think the Jerusalem Post was wrong. Really, by 2000, 2001, Eretz Yisrael is the largest Jewish community in the world. Awesome change. By the way, I don't want you to think that I'm such a go-on that I remember articles in the Jerusalem Post from 1990. I happen to remember that one because I wrote it. And I was right. What it means is that Jewish history is being written in Eretz Yisrael. This is not to denigrate any other Jewish community. There are great things that are being done, but I'm afraid to say that Jewish communities throughout the world may someday be no more than footnotes to history. But the real history of Klal Yisrael is being written in Eretz Yisrael. That's the place. And I want you to know something else. The contribution of American and Canadian Olim to Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael is awesome. In the field of Torah education, in medicine, in science, in technology, you name the field. Great contributions are being made. You have to forget all of the old jokes. Boy, when somebody tells me, I have a right to get angry, I still heard recently from somebody, how do you make a small fortune in Eretz Yisrael? You come with a big fortune. It's not true anymore. You come with a big fortune and you can make a bigger fortune. And you can make a contribution that's lasting to Klal Yisrael. There's a vibrance with all of the tzaros. And there's a lot of tzaros in Eretz Yisrael. and we suffer it daily. And despite that, there are major contributions that are people that people are making day in and day out. I tell you, one field that never occurred to me. I studied every other field, but then I was at the in the Binyanei Olam Yerushalayim at the English Daf Yomi celebration. The number of American-born Rebbes in Eretz Yisrael. Do you understand? There are Rebbes of great Hasidic groups, American-born, speak English with a Brooklyn accent. Contributions are being made in every field of human endeavor. It's a place where you can really make a difference. Yom Yerushalayim, as we say, Yom Yerushalayim, the mitzvah of Yom Yerushalayim, don't ever be a Mark David Schleifer. And there's a second aspect, and this becomes a bit more painful for me. A bit more painful. There's a struggle going on in Eretz Israel, a very, very serious struggle. Now, we don't know what the end is going to be, but I want you to know quite clearly. The battle for Yerushalayim that began in 1967 continues until today. That great message, Har HaBayit B'Yadeinu, Ani Chozer, Har HaBayit B'Yadeinu, the Temple Mount is in our hands. It's not really in our hands. Nor is Yerushalayim fully in our hands. And the only ones who are guilty of it are we ourselves. It's tenuous. There's a real battle for Yerushalayim. And it's not going to be fought by paratroopers. It's going to be fought by Amcha. And a former prime minister of the state of Israel, whose government had already ceased backing him, is able to offer Arafat half of Yerushalayim and the Temple Mount. Shomu Shamayim Azaz. When Jews are ready to divide Yerushalayim in half. I learned Eretz Yisrael in 55 and 56 when a big gray wall and barbed wire cut through the heart of the city like 1,000 knives. When political leaders say that we must end the conquest, the kibbutz, they are saying that those paratroopers that went in on Yom Yerushalayim didn't go in to liberate the city. They were conquerors who went in to pillage and ravage the city. Shomu Shamayim, prominent Orthodox rabbi, writes a column in the Jerusalem Post, wrote an article a number of weeks ago where he says, I am even in favor of a two-state solution. Aside from the tragedy of a two-state solution, it means of necessity that one is ready to divide Yerushalayim in half. There will never be a two-state solution without Yerushalayim being the capital of a Palestinian state. Suicide. I don't know what has happened to our people. I really don't know what's happened. How can we look at the liberation of Yerushalayim as a criminal act? An act of kibush. Day by day, we are losing our grip on Yerushalayim. The battle for Yerushalayim is raging in full force right now. And I'll tell you where the battleground is. The battleground is in the Veidekalim, in Atzmona, in Netzach Hazani, in Kfar Daron, in Morag, in Elei Sinai, in Gush Katif. Because if we say that Gush Katif isn't ours, then everything we took in the Six-Day War is not ours. We weaken our hold on Yerushalayim. A madness has overtaken our people. And we know the madness that we're moving into. Everything that we said a year ago has been confirmed. Everything has been confirmed. We know exactly what's going to happen. We know what the outbreak of terrorism is going to be afterwards. By the way, I've told my friends, rabbi friends in the United States, Stan, I'm the right-wing extremist, and they are the people who are well thought out. When they're going to have to watch their television screens from the middle of August on, and there will, God forbid, be terrible scenes shown every night, Jews won't know where to take their shame and hide. The great Chilul Hashem of all. Israeli soldiers taking Jews, getting them onto trucks and taking them out. Tragedy of awesome proportions. The battleground is throughout Eretz Yisrael, throughout the world. If I wasn't upset enough, why I had to see this morning star. Was beneath shielding that I had to see this morning star. And it's the same thing, you read it in Eretz Yisrael too. In other words, the pragmatists are the ones who are ready to divest themselves of everything. The wide-eyed, messianic crazies, they're the settlers. The real messianists in Eretz Yisrael are those who believe that all of these concessions are going to bring peace. You have to be a messianist to believe that. If you're living in the real world, you know exactly what's going to happen. It will bring tragedy upon planet Earth. And then, of course, I love when they start worrying about religious Zionists. You know all of you? Losing your religion because there's going to be this terrible crisis. Our dream of Eretz Yisrael HaShleima is simply being taken apart. We're going to fall apart. We don't know. We won't know what to do with ourselves. Our whole world is shattered. Shaitim Sheba Eilam. Throughout history, Jews have learned how to live with defeat. You know how you live with defeat? You fall and you get up again. We've learned through history we live with defeat but never despair. The problem is not with those who have to learn, who might have to learn to live with defeat. We'll take it, we'll be able to do it. The problem is there are those who've never learned how to live with victory. There are those who've never been able to learn how to live being, yes, the victorious one. We'll handle it. We've handled it throughout history. We'll handle it. So it'll take a little bit longer. Because we say Hallel on Yom Yerushalayim. And in that Hallel, we say Zeh Hayom Osa Hashem Nogila V'Nismecha Bo. This is the day that God has wrought. We will be full of joy. And it's followed immediately afterwards with Ono Hashem Hoshiono. God, we need you. Every moment of joy is also a moment that we turn heavenward and we say, Rabbeinu Shalom, for it to last, we need you. Finally, I think it's important that we learn especially on the Yom Yerushalayim, the Malbim says, Im eshkochech Yerushalayim tishkach yimini, if I forget Yerushalayim, let my right hand forget its cunning, refers to the idea of our willingness to act. The yad means, the hand means to act on behalf of Yerushalayim. Tidbak lishoni lechiki im lo eskedechi, let my tongue cling to its palate if I will not remember you, speaks about our willingness to talk out fearlessly on behalf of Yerushalayim. Im lo alef Yerushalayim al rosh simchati, if I will not remember Yerushalayim at the moment of my greatest joy. In thought and word and deed, we pledge ourselves to Yerushalayim. We will not fear anyone. We will stand up and we're going to fight for Yerushalayim. Teddy Roosevelt once said, I found it on the internet, she printed it out, and you know where you put a good part, you put it on the fridge. Teddy Roosevelt said, he who does not participate in the passion of his time will be considered as not having lived. He who does not participate, has a good soul, he who does not participate in the passion of his time will be considered as not having lived. Yerushalayim, Eretz Yisrael, they are the passion of our time. And we all want to be considered as though we've lived life to the fullest. We have to put Aliyah on the agenda. We have to encourage our children to study there. We have to visit time and time again. If we have a sabbatical, we should be there. The idea of living in Eretz Yisrael should not be, that's not for me. It is for everybody. We have to think about it. We have to plan. We have to assist. We have to assist one another. As Rav Kook wrote in 1907, Le'eretz Yisrael, he described prophetically what was going to happen in Europe, and he pleaded in 1907, Le'eretz Yisrael Habotai. But we've gone a step further. We've gone the step of wanting to be free migrants of an innovative nature. Rav Meisher, Rav Soloveitchik, Mitzvah Kiyumis, yes, we're ready to do it because we choose to do it. Because we choose to do it. That should be our dedication to Yerushalayim. That's what Yom Yerushalayim has to mean. It has to mean to us that we not only look toward Eretz Yisrael, but we begin the march toward Eretz Yisrael. Zahayom, Asa Hashem no gilo v'nismachavo, Rabotai, Chag Sameach. Rabotai, Chag Sameach.